Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
We've got a really inspiring story lined up on the podcast today. David Green is joining us from the Bay Area of California. David's a full-time cop. He's a realtor. And over the last 8 years, he's been working on building out his rental portfolio. He's bought 20 properties, which is really, really awesome. David, welcome to the show. I'm excited to hear your story.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Dan. I'm excited.
Well, before we get into it, let's just take a quick break and we'll come back and we're going to walk through how you built your portfolio.
Sounds good.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
David, so why don't we start with you telling us what got you first interested in buying rental properties?
All right. So I kind of backed into this whole thing. I had no idea that I wanted to be a landlord. A buddy from my church was telling me that he had bought a house to live in and he just got accepted into Bible school. So he was having to move away and he was bummed because he was going to lose his deposit. And I was working as a deputy sheriff at a time. I'd been doing it for about a year. And I kind of thought, well, maybe I'll buy your house and just I'll rent it out until I'm ready to live in it. And then when I am, I'll move in. So I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to evaluate a rental property. I didn't know what to look for. I was completely green. Pardon the pun, because that's my last name. So I go check it out. And it was this like 5-bedroom house that was 2,500 square feet. It was only 4 or 5 years old, like not what you look for with a rental property. Mm. And he had it under contract for $215,000. Now, this was the time in California when we were hit by the foreclosure crisis and every 3 houses had a for sale sign on it. So even though this was insanely cheap for the area, we were all kind of watching prices drop and wondering, are they going to get to $100,000? Is anyone ever going to buy a house again? I mean, it was really, really weird. And I didn't have any background in real estate, so I didn't know what to expect. But I thought $215,000 sounded good compared to what I had seen other stuff selling for. So I just called his real estate agent and said, hey, Matt can't buy your house and he's going to lose his deposit. But he said, if he can get someone else to buy it, maybe he can keep it. Do you think I could buy it? She said, yeah, let's get you pre-approved. So that took about, 10 minutes because back then they would give a loan to anybody still. And she said, well, do you want to buy it for $215,000? I said, no. Do you think we get any cheaper? She said, yeah, I think so. Let me call the broker, who was also the guy. The listing agent was the person who worked for her. So he was also the one who was going to talk to the bank and tell them whether they should take the deal or not. So she comes back and said, we think we can do $195,000. And I said, well, I thought it was good at $215,000. I'll do $195,000 for sure.
Wow.
So I ended up taking over the contract and buying the property and try to manage it myself because I bought a Landlord for Dummies book. The first big mistake that I made was trying to do things that I'm not good at to pinch pennies, and it went terrible. The tenant paid about 2 months of rent and then stopped paying, and it was a long, painful process to get him evicted. And I ended up hiring a property management company, and the whole thing went smooth from there. And that was kind of the very beginning steps of when I learned, if you want to be a successful investor, you start finding people to do the things that you're not good at rather than trying to learn the entire gamut yourself.
You know, a lot of people, I think, would have given up at that point. You've got a bad tenant. Did you ever think about giving up, or what made you want to push forward and keep doing this?
All right. So most of your listeners are used to hearing people say, no, you just have to suck it up and push through and be persevere. I didn't do any of that. I wanted to sell it. I was upset. I thought I made a huge mistake getting into real estate. The only reason I didn't sell it is because it hadn't appreciated enough to make sense. And I just kind of figured I got to stick it out. And once I got the property manager in place, I just realized like I had this epiphany. This is easy. Like when something breaks, they know who to call. When the tenant doesn't pay, I don't have to track the person down. They just go put a 3-day notice on the door. You know, it makes sense now. They know how to do this whole thing. It would be like, you know, I'm a police officer. When a crime happens, I know what questions to ask and I know what forms to fill out and I know how to put a search together for the suspect. The average citizen doesn't know any of that.
Right.
So trying to take a guy who's like, you know what, I'm going to start a neighborhood watch and we're going to be our own police. He'd be lost. He wouldn't have any idea what to do. You know, that's the beauty of having a society we do with people that are trained in specific things. You know, like you run a really great podcast. If I try to put a podcast together, I wouldn't know where to even start. And that's the thing you got to realize is real estate is like everything else in life. You find the right people and you let them do their job and they'll make you money.
Right, right. So you bought a couple of properties before the market started going up and then you had to branch out to other markets. Was that difficult to, or I guess to tell me how that happened, how you decided that where you were investing just didn't make sense anymore and you had to look somewhere else?
Yeah, so this should be really encouraging to a lot of your listeners because, again, I owned four properties at this time. I bought probably one or two a year. I had three single family houses and one fourplex. The fourplex was killer, right? When I got that thing and I saw my return, I was like a 30% return. And I realized this thing is going to pay itself off in 3 years. I need to buy as many of these as I can.
Yeah.
Right around that time, the market took off in California. It had been 3 years since the foreclosure crisis. So all the short sale people that lost their home were coming back in the market. Interest rates were low. They were able to get a fixed rate instead of an adjustable. And it just went bonkers. I mean, it was like every home was getting 25 offers the first week. You couldn't buy anything. So I got discouraged. And for 9 months to a year, I kind of sat around moping because I couldn't buy rental property. You know, my whole plan was destroyed as soon as I came up with it. And then one day I was watching TV. And like most of us that like real estate, when we hear the word real estate, we kind of perk up and tune in. And there was this realtor on Fox Business News talking about Arizona real estate and how they were just now seeing a turnaround. And, you know, the recovery is hit hardest on the coast. And then they kind of move inward just like the crashes do. And it had, you know, the West Coast, it had slowly, the recovery had made its way into Arizona. So I got her info and I just started emailing her and calling her and harassing her basically till she finally got back in touch with me and said, hey, I want to buy some rental property out there. And finally she agreed to do it. She's one of the top selling agents in the whole state. So I flew out there and we drove around and we looked at houses and she introduced me to a property manager. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I've got those two pieces that I have in California. I can do this out here. And I bought two homes from through her that I never saw. I flew back. She sent them to me and I said, okay, they look good. Let's just do it. And then the property manager came in and, you know, the homes needed work. I needed to paint them. I needed to get them ready for rent. Some of the flooring had to be replaced. Some of the appliances weren't working. And he had people that took care of it all. And I thought, oh, that's how you do it, right? Like, you just let these people bring their people in. Now, I paid way too much for the work that was done, right? I learned a lesson. Now I would never pay those prices. But at the time, I didn't know any better. And I thought, oh, okay, this is how you do it. So I ended up, long story short, she wasn't my realtor for very long. She got in some trouble with the law. But I kept the property manager. And then I started having him get me several bids through contractors. And from there, I was able to find contractors that gave me better prices and that I liked. And I kind of branched out once I had a good contractor. Well, now I could look for houses that need work instead of houses that were really good. So I was getting better deals that way. And I kind of put this out-of-state team together in Arizona for the next couple of years.
Now, you're also a realtor in addition to being a police officer. And something that we hear all the time from our listeners is they have a hard time finding a realtor that really understands what investors are looking for. Was it hard? Like this lady that you were working with, she was a big agent, but did she really understand how to help you as an investor?
No, she... Okay. I was very disappointed, just like everyone else. I would say, what's it going to rent for? And she would give me a number based probably off whatever Zillow's estimate was at the time. She didn't understand things like CapEx. She didn't understand how to calculate an ROI. She was a realtor. And what she knew is, I think this house would sell for X, but we can get it for Y. And that was about as much as she could help me. I had to put the other pieces together myself.
And at that point, did you really understand the cash flow numbers that you were looking for yet? Or were you still kind of piecing that together?
Oh, that's funny you asked that, because it was in the car ride with her. I remember to this day where she had said, well, what kind of return do you want? And I didn't know what to tell her because I had never thought of it.
Right.
And I basically in my head was like, well, I'm getting, you know, if I put down 30 grand, I get about 300 a month. If I put down 40 grand, I get about 400 a month. So that's about what I'm looking for. And I later went back home and realized that what I was describing was a 12% return. And that kind of just became my de facto benchmark. If it doesn't return 12% cash on cash, then it's not a good investment.
Okay. And then at some point, then you ran into the same problem in Arizona that you did in California, that those properties started appreciating and you couldn't make 12% anymore, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
So what did you do then? You found another market?
Well, I started dabbling in other type of investment vehicles because I had a hard time finding another market at that point because I had too many properties. I had over 10. It was very hard to get financing because, as you know, you can't get a Fannie or Freddie backed loan once you're over 10 and you have to find portfolio lenders. That was a very cumbersome experience. So I started investing with a buddy of mine, Andrew Cushman. He buys syndicated homes similar to kind of the Joe Fairless model, or his my homes with their apartments. So I was giving him money and investing in those. And those were returning like 18% on an IRR, an internal rate of return. So they were pretty good investments. And I got into mortgage notes. I bought some of those. And then I stumbled across a guy who was wholesaling houses in Jacksonville, Florida, and he put me in touch with a lender out there that would let me borrow against a commercial line of credit. And all of a sudden, I was back in the game. I could buy properties cash, fix them up, and then I could pull my money back out. And if I did it well, I'd be able to pull out 100% of the capital that I'd put in, and I didn't have this problem anymore of, well, I got to save for 4 or 5 months before I can afford a down payment.
Now, was that difficult working with a wholesaler? Because when you're working with a realtor like you were in Arizona, the realtor is going to maybe hold your hand a little bit and help you out, where a wholesaler is going to be like, here's the deal. Do you want it? Yes or no? Was it harder going into a market without having someone to help you? Or did you feel that at that point you had enough of a background that you maybe didn't need that hand holding?
Oh, that's a great question. And I'm glad you asked it, because I thought I didn't need that hand holding and I still got burned. I mean, not burned. That's probably not a great term. Some things didn't work out as good as I expected them to. And it wasn't necessarily the wholesaler's fault. When you're buying from a wholesaler, it's usually like a one-page contract and it's kind of buyer do your own diligence type stuff. And I did the diligence that I knew to do from where I had invested before. But in a new market, there was new things that you have to be considerate of that I just didn't even know I didn't know. So, you know, an example would be I bought a house from a wholesaler that was a great cash flow and it was a great deal. However, it was in a flood area. So the insurance was really, really high, like 5 times higher than it would have been if it wasn't in a flood area. And in California, we don't have flood areas. In Arizona, we don't have flood areas. Right. So this was a totally different experience, right? So it didn't kill the deal. It was still pretty solid. But that's when I kind of realized, all right, the first couple, at least, I need to get myself a good realtor and maybe pay him, even if he's not getting the commission, pay him like a retainer fee to look these deals over and say, well, have you considered A, B, or C?
Okay. And then you also had a property manager that you were working with down there?
Yes. And the property manager, I would not recommend ever doing this in an area that you don't live. I mean, even in the area I live, I think you should get one, but especially in an area that you don't live. You need a property manager, not just to manage a property, but you need it to be an advisor. You need them to tell you, yeah, that this house looks like it's worth this much money. But trust me, they're using comps from 3 blocks away. This neighborhood is the one with all the crime, with all the gangs, with all the human trafficking, the area that you don't want to be in. They intimately know those neighborhoods because they have to deal with the headaches that come from the tenants that move into those homes. And they'll tell you, hey, don't buy this house. I don't want to have to manage it and you don't want the headaches. Whereas if you don't have that and you're just looking at pictures on Zillow, there's a lot of information that you don't have.
Right. Now, buying out of state, it can seem scary, but with all the information that we have today, it really isn't scary, right?
No, because when I look at the way that I buy properties or manage properties, that the first round of houses I bought that are maybe 45 minutes away from me, it's pretty much the same exact process as the ones that I buy all the way across the country. When something goes wrong, you have a system in place for who you contact, how they give you the bid, and how you're going to pay them. It doesn't matter if it's 5 houses down or if it's 5,000 miles away. It's all kind of the same thing. And with the technology that we have today, the advances that you mentioned, you can get all the information that you need to know whether to buy a house or not from the internet. It's usually just an emotional barrier that we all have where we're scared. Like there's this comfort that comes from driving by the house and looking at it. And I don't know why that is so important to people, but I hear all the time that I just couldn't do it. I have to drive by the place and see it, like right, as if an alien would have abducted it and no one told you.
right. It doesn't matter. Right.
And if they to the ground, you're going to hear about it the next day. And whether it was 4 houses down doesn't mean it's less likely to burn to the ground.
Right, right. Now, let me see if you can help me out, because I was looking at an out-of-state deal a few months ago, and I had lined up a realtor in the area. I had lined up a property manager. I talked to them. I thought I'd found good people. And I found a deal that looked really good. I mean, this house was priced way below all the other comps in the area. And so I called my agent. I sent her over to take a look at it, take some pictures. She said, everything looks great. I think we should make an offer on it. So we made an offer on it. We got it accepted. And then I sent over my property manager to get his opinion on it, to make sure everything looked good, to make sure that my rent estimate was right. And when he came back, he gave me a totally different picture of the house than the realtor did. There was, from the realtor's opinion, nothing needed to be fixed. From the property manager's perspective, who I guess has more skin in the game because it's going to be his problem if I buy a bad house, he was telling me I probably needed to put $20,000 into the house to fix it up. So how do you know that the people that you're working with are being honest with you?
Well, usually you don't know until after you've bought that first home, right? Yeah. For me, it's a little bit easier. And I offer this service to anyone who reaches out to me. I can call, because I'm a Keller Williams agent, I can call a Keller Williams office in the area, find their team leader, and then ask for who is your very, very best agent that works with investors and owns rental property themselves. And I can make sure that the agent I'm getting is looking at it through the eyes of an investor, not through a typical agent's eyes. And I avoid a lot of the problems that way. The next question you have to ask yourself, which it sounds like you already did, is, okay, well, who has more skin in the game? The property manager is looking at this like, I got to deal with something that's a problem. It doesn't benefit him if you spend $20,000 to fix the house up.
Right.
The real estate agent is looking at it from the perspective of, I want this commission, right? If she was smart, she'd realize you're a person who's going to buy multiple properties, and she would have done a little more due diligence before giving you that advice. It sounds like she might have been looking at, well, I just want this quick deal.
Yeah, that's so true. She, definitely, like, after I wanted to get out of the contract, she was giving me a hard time, was telling me I was going to lose my deposit, which I knew we had an inspection contingency. I knew that I had an out in the contract. So right. I called her broker and he helped me get out and everything worked out. I got my earnest money back. But I think that's a really good service to make sure you get an agent that's going to really be good and be able to help you out and understand what an investor is looking for. We'll go ahead and put your contact information on our show notes page. If someone wants to look it up, it's rentalincomepodcast.com/episode91. So David, let me ask you one more question before we wrap things up here. Now, having three different markets that you're working in and having three different property managers, is that a lot to juggle? Because I'm sure every property manager maybe has their own way of doing things, or is it complicated having things so spread apart?
No, it's not. And I know that it seems like it would be, and common sense might even dictate that it should be. But the hard part, or I shouldn't say hard, or the time-consuming part, is building your team. Finding the contractor that gives you a good price and does good work. Finding the property manager that you like. Finding the real estate agent that is objective and is looking out for your interests. You're usually going to kiss a few frogs before you find that prince. And I know that turns a lot of people off, but it's not different than anything else in life. Very rarely do you walk into the first restaurant you find is your favorite restaurant and everything on the menu is good, right? Mm-hmm. Everything that happens, you go through a couple jobs, you go through a couple friends, you date a couple people. You don't find the right person right away. It's kind of through the process of that courting someone that you even find what you're looking for. And this is the same thing. But once you find them, it becomes like clockwork. You know, my typical acquisition looks like an agent sends me a text message and says, hey, I found a house I think you'd like. This is the ARV. This is what we can buy it for. Here's some pictures. I am pretty good at this point that I can look at the pictures and estimate the rehab, but I still send the address to my contractor and say, hey, I need you to drive by and give me an estimate on what the work would be. I don't trust the agent's calculation of it. Even if they're good, they're not contractors, you know? Right. I don't want the busboy at the restaurant cooking my food, even if he's really, really good at being a busboy.
Right.
The contractor goes by, he comes back, says, hey, this is the, I have him give me an itemized list of all the stuff that's going to be done and what each individual job will charge. And I can share that process with any of your listeners. And I say, okay, the rehab is going to be 25 grand. The agent says we can get it for 60. I'm going to be all in for 85. The ARV is 120. I know that that's a good deal, right? So then I text the property manager the address and say, hey, what do you think about the area? They look it up and they give me a thumbs up or thumbs down, and they say the rent's going to be between this and this. And at that point, if all three people are telling me, yeah, this is a good deal and the numbers make sense, then I buy it. I think the problem is people are relying on one person to do all that work for them, and it's not a very efficient system. You know, agents know how to do a very specific part of real estate. Contractors know how to do a very specific part of real estate. You really have to find those people and have them throw their two cents into the projects that you're looking at to get the full picture of if it'll be a good deal.
Right. Now, when your contractor is done with the work, how do you make sure that everything is done right? Are you getting any kind of an inspection, or are they just sending you pictures to show you what they've done?
Yeah, pictures are a big part of it, and videos. But no, I actually look for the people that have skin in the game, and I have them verify the work, right? That's just human nature. So if this is a flip and the agent's going to be the one that sells it, I have the agent stop by three or four times during that project to look things over, because when we put it up for sale, if something comes up during the inspection of the buyers and they realize it's a problem, now it's his problem. Got to fix this for me, right? Right. So I want him looking at it because he knows that. If it's a rental, I do the same thing with the property manager. They stop by and they check things out. And if they see like, ooh, I don't like this, there's a problem, the tenant's going to complain, then we get it fixed while the contractors are still on the site.
That sounds like a great system. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. We're going to put your contact info on the website. Again, you can look it up at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 91. But if somebody wants to hear the information, why don't you tell us your website and where someone can reach out to you if they want to?
Oh, that'd be awesome, man. I have a website, greenincome.com. Green has an E at the end of it. So G-R-E-N-E income.com. And you can email me at david@greenincome.com. On my website, I post all the blog articles that I write and the podcasts I've been on. I have some spreadsheets there that help people. But I also show pretty much every deal that I buy. I run down the numbers, how much it costs, what I paid for it, how I found it, how I rehabbed it, pictures of the rehab process, pretty much everything that someone who wants to learn how to invest in real estate wants to know without having to spend a bunch of money and make mistakes to figure out. I'll be updating it around February 1st with a bunch of new info. I have an assistant I'm hiring. She's going to help me get all up to speed with everything. But if people want to get a hold of me, that's the best way. And then you can also find me on Facebook at DavidGreen24.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a great resource. Definitely go over there and check it out. And if someone is looking to buy in your area and they're looking for a realtor, what areas do you serve?
So if you want real estate services, I'm in the California Northern Bay Area, or just the Bay Area, and then the Central Valley as well.
Okay.
So I belong to both associations of realtors. And if you're looking for a good realtor in a different part of the country than where I'm actually selling myself, I know realtors, the top realtors in most states, and I can put you in touch with them, and you can know that you're getting an experienced realtor who isn't going to tell you what the one that you had told you and then burn her own reputation.
Right. Perfect. Perfect. Well, David, thanks for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.